Want to welcome in Chris Carey. Chris, thanks for coming in today.
Thanks for having me.
And what is our classic pick?
Classic pick this week is Roxy Music's Country Life. Came out 45 years ago, November 15th, 1974. So she came out on my wife's birthday when she was a kid. So it was Roxy Music's fourth studio LP. Roxy Music, of course, they formed in London in late 69, early 70, by the lead singer and main songwriter, Brian Ferry, along with the bass player, Graham Simpson. And they, along with Phil Manzanera on guitar and Andy McKay on sax and Paul Thompson on drums, were kind of considered the quintessential band. And they were together. That was the core of the band throughout the history. Not long after that, they did ask Brian Eno to join the band, and he was only with the band for the first two albums, the self-titled 1970 release and the 1972 For Your Pleasure release, and then he dropped out of the band to pursue his own solo career. He, of course, released a few amazing records on his own, and then it's become a super famous producer. We've talked about him a million times in this segment. I think he ended up going on to be one of the biggest people in rock as far as influence. Another one I wanted to mention is Eddie Johnson, who was on this album. I think he didn't play on the first record, and then he played on most of the studio records. He played synths and violin and electric violin some in this album. He was a pretty hot commodity on top of playing with Roxy Music. He also played with Curve there, Frank Zappa, Jethro Tull, King Crimson, and Yes. Speaking of King Crimson, I neglected to mention Brian Ferry started Roxy Music when he failed to get the singing position in King Crimson.
He wasn't good enough for King Crimson.
He auditioned for it. Well, actually, they thought he was actually pretty great. They just didn't think he was right for the band. And so then after he didn't get into King Crimson, he started his own band. And you know, Roxy Music was always way more successful in Europe and Australia than they were in North America. They kind of are associated with both glam rock and prog rock. And secondly, maybe electrical composition, because there wasn't a lot of electric music that early. In the 70s, there were a few artists that really started messing with it. Of course, glam rock, you know, is kind of named for their outrageous costumes. Other well-known glam rock bands are David Bowie, T-Rex, Mott the Hoople, Sweet and Slade. And it was mostly a UK phenomenon, but you could probably throw in New York Dolls and at least Lou Reed and Iggy Pop, a few albums in their 70s could probably be grouped in with glam rock.
If you think back to that time, it was almost as if everyone had to have some sort of angle or act or something. I even think of, you know, Angus Young and his schoolboy outfit. It was something. It was almost like everyone was told, you got to have something more than just who you are as a band. You have to have some sort of image with it or some sort of visual aspect. And I think also a lot of people were surprised when Roxy Music was inducted into the Hall of Fame, because like you said, they really didn't have the acceptance here, but I think throughout the music industry and worldwide.
Well, they were, you know, influence. Yeah. And we talked about this too in this segment before, and there's kind of, there are the acts that are huge smash, you know, hits that sell, or that have smash hits. They sell millions of albums, and they are known, you know, broadly throughout society. And then there's acts that are really, really, really influential and kind of like musicians, mm-hmm. and Roxy Music are one of those. They're one of those bands who have a significant body of work and tons of fans. Brian Ferry tours today, and he plays very, you know, good sized venues, like 3,000 to 5,000 cap venues, and sells out all the time. So he's still very relevant, but you know, they never sold millions and millions of records, and especially in the U.S. And they're also kind of a prog rock band, which is, you know, because they focus on the, you know, these jazz and classical inspired orchestrations and really complicated. So that, you know, Roxy Music, on top of kind of being a glam rock act, unlike some bands that were kind of glam rock acts and not necessarily known for their virtuosity. I mean, Roxy Music, all the guys in this band, like Phil Manzanera, is considered by almost everybody an amazing guitar player.
Yeah, I was saying when you came in, I always thought of Roxy Music, people would ask, what's their genre? It was almost the track you heard from it. It was really a real broad, lots of different styles, lots of different sounds, and just a huge influence. And really, Brian Ferry, I think, is known better, probably more now, for his pop career being so popular in that sort of second phase of his career.
Well, he got to be known pretty well as a solo artist too after Roxy Music finally called it quits in, like, I believe it was 84. This album was recorded in Air Studios, which is the famous that's the famous studio that was founded by the Beatles producer George Martin in '69. It's a really cool studio, 19th century church. So they had amazing acoustics there. Recorded in just 2 months, July, August in 1974. Production credit goes to Roxy Music, who they shared with Chris Thomas and John Punter. Chris Thomas was a much bigger name than John Punter. He had worked with the Beatles and Pink Floyd and Badfinger and Elton John, Pretender, like Sex Pistols, tons of bands. Chris Punter did a lot more engineering work, but he'd also done some pretty cool production work with some other artists as well. Commercially, this hit number three on the UK albums chart, so it was pretty big in the UK. This was the first album that broke the top 40. In the U.S., it got up to 37 on the Billboard Top 200. And sales, sales were pretty good, but still, you know, this wasn't something that sold millions and millions of copies. I think it went gold in the U.K., which I believe in the U.K. is over 100,000 copies. Critically, I mean, from the get-go, on both sides of the Atlantic, this was met with everybody thought it was amazing. Every critic pretty much thought it was amazing. Actually, Rolling Stone was actually quoted as saying it was the zenith of British art rock.
No kidding.
Yeah, so like, I mean, and a lot of people do think that like this, along with maybe King Crimson and early Genesis, are kind of the quintessential prog rock albums of the early 70s. Mm-hmm. I wanted to mention, you mentioned earlier that you had not even noticed the cover art before. This cover art was pretty shocking when it came out in 1974, because it
would be risque by even today's standards.
Yeah, it's two attractive women wearing their underwear basically. and so, but when it came out, it was censored in the US, it was censored in Australia. But what I thought was kind of interesting about it was I found out that those two women, one of them was the girlfriend of Michael Crowley, that's his name. Michael Crowley, who was a member of Can. It was his girlfriend and his sister that ended up on the cover of this, which I thought was kind of funny. And the title Country Life came from a British rural lifestyle magazine.
It's amazing to me how often has that happened. Not that long ago, we had the Rolling Stones record. I forget which one it was, but they had a different cover. It had the bathroom scene on the cover. And
oh, yeah.
It was apparently not up to record company standards back in the 70s.
Yeah, that was a problem. And then again, with Sticky Fingers, that was considered pretty risque as well. But so after Country Life, Roxy Music released Siren, which produced their first and only U.S. hit single, Love is the Drug, which you were talking about earlier, that was one of your favorite songs. They released another couple records, then went on hiatus, they toured a little bit more, and then, like I said, after they released Avalon in 1982, they disbanded. If nothing else, Roxy Music is something that, I mean, if you're into, basically they influenced so much of what became punk, post-punk, and new wave in the late 70s and early 80s. I don't think that there would have been, I think if the new wave movement had happened, it would have sounded a lot different without Roxy Music. It's not just me saying that. There's a lot of people that say that. There's tons of artists from the late 70s and early 80s that said they were just blown away by Roxy Music. I remember I read an article not too long ago about Peter Buck and Michael Stipe. When they were in college together, they started talking about music and formed a band because they were both into Roxy Music.
Yeah, so many of the real influential albums, it's hard to understand down the road because you had to be there at the time to realize that was kind of the turning point that really started influencing people and really changing the sound. A lot of times I think a band like Roxy Music, where you had so many talented people, just like other bands, you know, they had their time together, and it's probably good that at some point they split off and each person was then able to kind of individually pursue what they did. But, you know, they left us this amazing thing they put together at the same time.
Well, yeah, and almost everybody that was in Roxy Music has had an amazing career outside of Roxy Music as well.
Well, Chris, thank you so much for coming in. I say this is what I love so much about KXCI is we get to revisit so much of this stuff and learn so much about the history of the music we all love.